So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
And the Oscar goes to... Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. I tell you what, I had to start with that, and I know it sounded corny, but, you know, I think the Best Actor and Best Actress Awards should have been given to Barack and Michelle Obama. I really do. But to get the next best thing, I guess, Michelle Obama got to present the award for Best Picture last night at the 85th Annual Academy Awards. And that's really, really comical, as Rush Limbaugh pointed out today. Though no fan of Limbaugh, every now and then he does come across with some funny things, and I thought that was one of them. But before we get there, Mr. Martin, how are you, sir?
All right, sir. back in the Eastern time zone this week, so...
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Mr. Martin got to wear his six-shooter on his hip last week with a Texas cowboy hat, taking care of business out in Dallas. And
I don't wear cowboy hats, but it's funny you bring up the gun thing, because I was shuttling around the Dallas-Fort Worth area with a fellow supplier who we work with, and he's not from the South. And we went into one large customer's place, and up on their screen in their conference room, they had one of the guys was looking at scopes. He's just using the first, and he had some scopes up there. And just to let you know the cultural differences, and so we commenced to talking about guns.
You know, there's
probably
no song
out
there.
5 minutes. Probably went on for about 5 minutes. You got what? Oh, yeah, you like that? You know, it's just gun talk. And the gentleman from Ohio says, I thought we were supposed to be talking about, chewing gum stuff. And I looked at him and said, I said, you're in Texas right now? I said, it's not a whole lot like in Kentucky. So,
right.
If we want to talk about guns for the first 10 minutes of this meeting, then we're going to talk about guns.
Well, of course. I just think it's hilarious. You know, there's a song out there, God Bless Texas. I believe Lone Star is the country group that sings it. To be honest with you, they're absolutely right. I love Texas. You know, speaking of love, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, 85th Annual Academy Awards were last night. And I've never seen such a grab for attention as I see from these Obamas literally on every chance they get. And Michelle Obama, First Lady last night, actually presented the award for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. Now, what was really funny about this, and I found it so laughable, was the Best Picture Award went to a movie named Argo. And what the movie Argo was about is about the rescue of embassy personnel under attack in Iran. Now, how pathetic is that, that Michelle Obama would be presenting the Best Picture Award for that particular movie, considering everything we went through in Benghazi? I thought it was pathetic. I thought it was incredible.
It only could have been worse had Hillary Clinton been the one to give it out.
Yeah, well, agreed. Her, Barack Obama, you know, any of those top three, I thought it was very, very interesting. I think it was very clear message to the people, you know. I really do. And I know people think that you get into conspiracy theory when you talk like that. There's not one damn thing that the Obamas do that is not calculated to the nth degree on the positives or negatives of it. You know, I mean, let's face it, the Obama administration failed to rescue any Americans under attack in Benghazi. They failed to even respond to that attack. You know, they didn't do anything. Now we've got, of course, the Obama administration is now saying that they're going to go ahead and release documents on the Benghazi attack. Now that, you know, the Senate hearings are over and nothing's really going to be done about it, you know. But it was interesting to see Michelle Obama present that particular award. I was shocked. I was outraged. I don't even watch the Oscars for the most part. And quite honestly, I found out about it this morning, and I looked at the YouTube video of the presentation, and I was like, oh, my God. You know, this is incredible. This is totally incredible. You know, you talk about it. You can call it irony if you want to. Call it anything you want. But I found it very insulting to the average intelligence of the American people to have to even witness that, considering everything we're going through right now. So that's nothing new. And I guess that the Obamas can't get Oscars for best actor or best actress in a public political job, then, you know, I guess the next best thing is presenting it right on the grandest stage. I don't know. I thought it was humorous. I don't know if you saw that, Ed, but I thought it was humorous as hell.
I did not watch the show. You know, I come up with little acronyms for Oscar, you know, overpaid self-congratulatory actors reading scripts, you know, Oscars. I just don't want to watch it. You know, I don't really even remember seeing any movies this year. I'll probably get some DVDs of them, but yeah, just you know, and to top it off, they're all hypersensitive. I mean, they, you know, when Billy Crystal makes jokes about them, or Ricky, now I'd watch it if a guy like Ricky Gervais had done it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, taking a few bites at them, but it's like, no. These people are so self-important. They're all so beautiful. They're all picking up their $45,000 worth of, you know, goodie bags. And it's just you know what? No, I'm sorry. I just, you know, put the part of the weekend in another state, come right back to work, and end up working late that day. You know, this, that, and the other. I'm sorry. If I want your escapism, I'll go to the movies or I'll rent a DVD and play it or something. But I'm not going to partake in your real world escapism where you all, you know, all these actors and actresses act like there's, you know, they're really into the art and stuff and into the achievement. It's like, yeah, that's why you sign 7-figure and 8-figure deals to do movies. You self important.
Well, they are. I mean, not at all.
Wild wool covered fat, you know.
Well, it is. It's all self-inflated, ego-driven. You know, most people don't know. These guys don't attend the Oscars for the award. I mean, they're actually compensated for attending the Oscars. Now, do they get paid cash? You get checks? No, but they do get these bags, as you pointed out, $45,000 gift bags. You know, I mean, that's incredible. You're going to give these guys $45,000 gift bags. So think about every one of the gift bags that went out to the hundreds of people that were there last night. That's hundreds of jobs right there. How many people would love to make $45,000 a year that they just wasted on a gift bag to a self-inflated, bloated ego for an actor or actress who's already a multimillionaire? It defies logic.
I mean, you know, you got all that. I mean, wouldn't it just be a classy move if they just say, what? you know, everybody could say, what, $45,000 gift bags? No. Just donate what you would have spent on putting a gift bag together to a homeless shelter, you know. And
oh, exactly.
Lord knows. Yeah. You don't
need
it. They're borrowing jewelry, and they, you know, they're all showing up in their Vera Wang dresses, and I'm just not into it.
And all of that's free, too. I mean, they don't pay for their dresses. Everything there, I mean, it's the ultimate handout mentality. Just because you make a movie, you're a millionaire, you make a movie, so you get all this screen time, you get this self-inflated ego, we're going to give you a free dress, throw an outrageous amount of money figure on top of it that we're actually never going to sell the dress for. You know, we're going to give you a $45,000 free bag and give you more face time and help you find another job. It's totally phenomenal to me. The whole concept behind these awards programs is ridiculous, but it was amazing to me that Michelle Obama would actually be pegged to give out a Best Picture Award about a movie that happened when we rescued six American embassy personnel in 1979 in Iran after everything that they just failed at in Benghazi. It was totally ludicrous. And most people that I've talked to today that actually saw that, either like I did on YouTube or actually watched the awards themselves, were very disturbed by the message that was sending out. So we'll see what happens. But speaking of disturbing messages, Ed, you know, we've got this other stuff going on in the world today that don't have to do with the Obamas trying to be TV celebrities. Governor Steve Beshear has decided he wants to be a fly in the ointment, if you will, for industrial hemp here in Kentucky. Now, we already know that Greg Stumbo is sitting here saying that he is not going to allow industrial hemp. He doesn't want it. He's doing everything he can to stop the process of getting it approved. As we know, it already passed out of the Senate. We already have a bill concerning industrial hemp that passed out of the Senate. But Greg Stumbo, as Speaker of the House, is trying to kill it. And, of course, he has a lot of help from his good friend and butt buddy, Mr. Governor Steve Beshear. Steve Beshear and Greg Stumbo continue to say that industrial hemp wouldn't be good for us because there's too many concerns from law enforcement, and that this conflict was going to keep law enforcement from being able to crack down on marijuana growers. Now, for background purposes here, we really have to point this out. The people who actually support industrial hemp and have spoken in favor of industrial hemp include none other than Agriculture Commissioner Jamie Comer, which he even ran on when he ran for office. He used that as a platform. He's following it up. It also includes none other than Senator Rand Paul, I should say. It includes, you know, John Yarmuth, Tom Massey.
Mitch McConnell, John Yarmuth. Yeah.
Right. So all the heavy hitters are behind this on both sides of the aisle, Democrat and Republican. And, oh, by the way, when they had the hearings at the Senate, former CIA Director James Woolsey, who was, you know, in charge of all the – who was in charge of the CIA during the Clinton administration – He told them in no uncertain terms after Rodney Brewer, the Kentucky State Police Chairman, who doesn't have a clue, he's a political appointee who doesn't have a clue about the real world of law enforcement, was schooled by CIA Director or former CIA Director James Woolsey, who said, quote, that a drug dealer who would plant marijuana next to hemp, industrial hemp, would have to be stupid and high already to do so. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, well, it cross-pollinates. I mean, you know, any studies you read, the marijuana they grow nowadays is much more potent than what they grew way back when. And, you know, they have refined it. You know, they got all these strange bud configurations that you see on the Internet and stuff. But, you know, they grow it. It's a definite hybrid. These are refined plants for the maximum amount of THC. And, yeah, you start putting it in there, the pollen, you get a little cross pollination, and all of a sudden, you know, your high grade marijuana that you're risking going to prison for, all of a sudden it starts turning into, you know, you might as well smoke dried banana peels or something like that, because it's losing its quality. And, you know, and as far as I know, I knew in college there were sure some picky smokers, you know, who wants to smoke that stuff. And if they keep doing it, you know, they're not geneticists. Once that industrial hemp gets in there, who knows? For all I know, that anybody knows, that could be a dominant genetic trait. It could begin to it may take them generations upon generations to bring that stuff out of their high-grade marijuana. So, yeah, they don't want to get anywhere near it. Plus,
well,
I also think it's worth noting, who wants to grow industrial hemp? And these are farmers. And, although I'm sure some farmers experiment with, you know, a little wacky-backy around the, around the perimeters or something. Yeah, far, far, far and away. All the farmers in this state, you know, they want viable crops that they can legitimately sell. They're going to do a measure of self-policing. You know, these are not the people. The farmer's not going to do that, and he's not going to be the one to slip marijuana in amongst his hemp, because first off, he'll probably lose it, mow it down, and grind it into fibers anyway. Well, he wasted his efforts, but. You know, they just—it's an insult to the farmers what Rodney Brewer's doing. It's just, and what Bashir's doing. It's like, look, if you don't think these guys can self-police, then, and that they won't self-police if they're making money growing industrial hemp, then you know what? You just effectively called all the farmers an idiot. Yeah,
well,
and that's
exactly it.
They won't self if they have a good cash crop, they will self-police.
Well, that's exactly it, and that really is disturbing on a lot of levels because. You know, we know that you can tell the difference between industrial hemp and marijuana. We know this. The Kentucky State Police Commissioner obviously doesn't. He continues to say that they can't tell the difference. So he's an idiot. Clearly, he doesn't have any clue what in the hell we're talking about when we talk about this subject. The cross-pollination that you just talked about is exactly the same argument that Jamie Comer put out. The CIA, former CIA Director James Woosley put out. You know, Rand Paul. I mean, for goodness sakes, folk.
Well,
Representative,
you know,
John Yarmuth is probably one of the most liberal people on the Hill.
Have you ever seen videos of the Canadian industrial hemp being harvested?
No, I haven't had any desire to.
They take it down like, hey, you know, there's a sickle bar or whatever, and they take it down like, hey, can you imagine somebody growing marijuana thinking they're going to be sneaky and putting it in a bunch of industrial hemp, and on a given morning when, you know, when nobody suspects it, Farmer Brown goes out, and sickle bars the entire field.
Oh, I know.
And bales your marijuana up with the hemp.
Well, what's really fascinating too is Rodney Brewer, the Kentucky State Police Commissioner, Rodney Brewer, continues to talk about illegal marijuana being grown in the hemp fields without them knowing. As you pointed out, these guys are going to self-police. And one thing that's really interesting, too, Brewer even points out that, you know, even with GPS coordinates, when we locate a field that we may want to go back to later, you know, because of surveillance, sometimes we have difficulty even finding that field. Well, okay, then. We know that you can use GPS coordinates to identify a field, obviously. If you don't go in and bust that field right away, anybody that's growing marijuana is a fool if once they harvest, they don't move. You know, so maybe that's the thing. We have difficulty even finding that field. Well, perhaps it's because you're not doing your job and good police work by busting that field. So my question would be, why are you not busting that field when you have it in your hands? And they're not doing it. And I could tell you why, but then I would go to jail for libel or slander or something, because I know where the money's coming from for this. I know who these guys are protecting, and I'm not allowed to talk about it. Because if I talk about it, there's going to be some repercussions that we're not ready to deal with just yet. But the bottom line is this. The bottom line was this. Everybody in America that knows any damn thing in the world knows industrial hemp and marijuana in the same field is suicide for the dealer. The dealer wants to make money. He's not going to make money selling the so-called banana peels, like you referred to it, Ed, as he is selling marijuana. In fact, those dealers are probably going to be a serious risk of bodily harm or death if they even try to pull that off. So it just defies total logic. But that's what happens when you get into these situations. And here is one reason why. Steve Beshear would rather sit here and make marijuana the issue than actually sit here and deal with the critical problems of prescription pill abuse. They have went through, they've identified these so-called Florida pill mills. They've identified the so-called tract of Louisville, Kentucky, or the state of Kentucky from the Florida pill mills. But they truly have not done anything to stop the spread of readily available prescription pills in Kentucky. Why is that? Because they don't want to stop it. More importantly, one of the biggest stories going on today, and this was actually on a national stage last week on the Dr. Phil show. Have you ever watched this?
No.
Well, see, I don't normally either, but I got wind of this, so I went ahead and looked it up and paid attention to it. But here's the bottom line. Last Friday, Dr. Phil did a show concerning the rise of heroin use in cities across America. Now, the show was about Simi Valley, which used to be considered one of the safest cities in America, and it no longer is because of heroin. But Louisville, Kentucky made the list of one of the top heroin-abusing cities in America. And he went on to describe all about how the heroin tracks through Detroit, goes on into Indianapolis, who apparently is the central hub, and ends up in Louisville. And before it can get distributed out of Louisville, it's all sold up. We're sucking up everything they can send us. So we know that we've got a major heroin problem in Kentucky. But since this administration under Governor Steve Beshear and his little crony House Speaker Greg Dumbo don't understand anything about drugs or how to combat it or fix it, or they're protecting someone, and that's what I believe is going on. You can call it a conspiracy theory all you want, then we've got a problem. They would rather go after marijuana and try to use illegal hemp and spend all our money, time, and resources trying to beat down industrial hemp rather than stop the real problem out there, the rampant prescription pill abuse and the rising heroin problem that we've got. Is that alarming?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I've always wondered that, you know, if somebody could, not on industrial hemp, but I'm getting towards the, you know, the legalized, somewhat, you know, recreational use of marijuana, just makes you wonder if, you know, if somebody could cop a little bit of a buzz from a joint, if they would experiment, you know, whether it could dead end it and somebody's just content with being a stoner. Or, you know, or you force them underground where they'll experiment with, the next big thing. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, gosh, I'd much rather have some stoners walking around growing a few stalks in their backyard, if that's what it came to, than somebody, you know, getting into the very violent and seedy and expensive world of prescription drugs and heroin. It's like, come on, you know, it's your... I could understand their position, the police's position. I could understand the governor or anybody, if they actually had shown at any point in time that they could effectively deal with any drug problem. But they can't.
Well, you know, just this month alone in February, you know, to tell you how serious this problem is, you know, even the Ragged Courier Journal that's run by Gannett, and you know we have no respect for these guys whatsoever, but they have actually run at least – 6 or 7 different stories just in the month of February concerning the arrests and everything going on with heroin. I mean, this is alarming. We've got people being busted with heroin, syringes, you know, Suboxone. Nobody wants to talk about Suboxone. You know, this is prescribed. There's a doctor here in Louisville that prescribes Suboxone for cash. They know who this guy is, but they won't shut him down. Why are they protecting him? You know, all this heroin, all these different things are rising. We're getting arrests just about every day, and nothing is being done to combat the problem. But industrial hemp is going to destroy Kentucky, right? I mean, this is alarming to me. It really is.
Yeah.
For you guys that want to call in, 858-683-1326, or our other line at 502-805-0334 if you're in the Louisville area. You can also join us in our live chat. And, you know, for you guys that are listening in the queue, as always, we appreciate the heck out of you. But make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad so we know you want to get on air. But, you know, Ed, I mean, this is really becoming a concern. You know, just last week, there was a guy who was arrested in a drug sting, had his 15-month-old daughter with him. Police were buying heroin from the guy in the parking lot of the Rite Aid right here on Dixie Highway. You know, we've got people pulled over just for a busted headlight, for example, and they find them with heroin, syringes, all kinds of stuff. I mean, this is just totally defies logic that these idiots in Frankfurt believe, for some reason, that, you know, industrial hemp, a legal crop, is going to be a problem for marijuana users. Why are we going after marijuana users? I have no idea. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Ed, got a whole lot to get into. Fidel Castro's regime is just about at an end. We're going to talk about the fall of America's cities. We're going to talk about Detroit. Maybe we'll get into some illegal immigration and some money policy, too. But anyway, folks, we'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Spriggs Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. Stay with us.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
Can by comedian Tim Hawkins. You can catch that song and many others at timhawkins.net. The guy is incredible. He's got a lot of songs like that I think most of you guys will really, really love. You know, we've got a lot of news going on. I want to touch on a couple of different things, Ed, and we'll get into some serious stuff here in a minute, but this is really fascinating to me. You talk about political correctness going crazy. There is a case right now involving a Rhode Island woman named Shelley Martinka. When she was pregnant, she had this craving for pickles. One of her favorite pickles had a brand on it that said Kosher Dill Midgets. Those were her favorite pickles. Well, her daughter was born, and apparently her daughter was born with some problems. So she got so upset when she walked through the store and saw these same pickles that she'd been buying forever that said Kosher Dill Midgets. It offended her so bad that she started a petition to have the company... Yeah, you heard me right, to have the company eliminate the midgets from the front of the label. Can you believe that?
Well, you know, yeah, I guess one needs to determine midget is a slang term. To some people it's an offensive term for short people, but you know, a midget that's probably not the classic definition. Midget just means, you know, something small. It's a midget cars, whatever. At some point, if you call, you know, and I've not done it, but I've seen it before. It's fine. They call somebody a midget, and it's not a midget. I'm a dwarf.
Well, yeah, dwarf. And, you know, part of it, and that's
medical,
the whole thing.
It's a medical condition, so it's like, okay, first and foremost, people aren't midgets. People are dwarves. So, you know, if you think somebody is a midget, then you've got the problem with what you think.
Well, this is political correctness gone crazy to me. I mean, it really is. I mean, this is stupid. You know, because her daughter was born with a form of dwarfism, now all of a sudden she's offended by the same label she'd been buying for years. You know, it's so hurtful to be used in such a benign fashion that it's just hard for a parent. Well, Miss Martinka, I'm sorry. Welcome to America. You know, there are problems in America. There are people who have problems in America. But to get upset over a damn pickle jar that says baby midgets or, you know, kosher dill midget pickles or whatever you want to call it, is ridiculous. Get over yourself. There's nothing personal against you. Yeah. It's something that's always been there. What do you do when you change the name to kosher dill babies? Is every parent in the world who just had a baby going to go crazy because they're eating babies? I mean, come on. I mean, that's the reality of it. This is just totally, totally mind-boggling. So, I just wanted to put that out there and let people make out, because this is just ridiculous that we're getting that politically correct that now we're going to start talking about, you know, midget pickles. Get real. And I'll tell you another story out there that's really disturbing. Ed, Florida Atlantic Football Stadium has been looking for a sponsor. Been looking for a sponsor for their daggone stadium. I figured you'd laugh about that. They finally picked up a sponsor, the GEO Group Incorporated. The GEO Group Incorporated is the second largest operator of, get this, folks, for-profit prisons. Now, they spend a quarter a meal per prisoner because they can't feed the prisoners real food, but they can go out and put millions of dollars to get their name, a prison name, on top of a stadium. Ed, what in the hell is going on?
I have no idea. I mean, why a stadium would even consider that, I have no idea. Why a prison company would think a stadium is a good idea, I have no idea. I mean, who knows? Maybe they both serve institutional food, so that might have something to do with it. But you know, I always remember from college, they said there's only three places in the world you can get this food, and this is college, high school, and prison.
Well, I mean, that's it. You know, everybody that sponsors these stadiums, like Papa John's Cardinal Stadium here in Louisville, you know, the sponsor is somebody who's selling a product. That's it. The product for Papa John's is pizza. So when you go to Papa John's Cardinal Stadium, you know you're going to a stadium that was named after pizza. It's right on the name. And while you're there, they've got all of these little, you know, different places that sell pizza. It's a product gimmick. That's the way it is. You know,
yeah.
You go to Minute Maid Park in Houston, you know, Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland. All of these people have products to sell. That's the why you sponsor. So what is GE Group trying to sell us? Are they going to have little jails set up in the arena at Florida Atlantic?
I mean, come on. It's one of those things that, like I say, that aside from even the sponsorship, the whole for-profit prison industry and the way it's set up with states, which is it's cool. You know, a lot of states essentially guarantee a certain population and a certain occupancy rate in these prisons. So, you know, they're basically, that's why a lot of times people don't get paroled early and stuff in these prisons, because they have to keep them. I mean, a state will contract with somebody like that, and then when they do, they'll say, well, they need an 80% occupancy rate, you know, 80% capacity at all times. So, it's a business, and it's a business of locking people up and treating people like human cattle. And I mean, it should definitely not be something that we put up for sponsorship in communities and stuff like that. I mean, if it's nothing else, it should be just an unspoken thing. You know, it's the entire industry is an undesirable, you know, but to put it on a football stadium, I mean, the jokes write themselves, you know.
Oh, it really does. And who pays for this for-profit prison, Ed?
The football team just shows up from their day job to play football, and then they go back. You know, how's that work?
And who's paying for the for-profit prisons? The taxpayers are. So they're using our money. They're using our money to publicize the fact that they're running our prisons. It just defies logic to me. This is
locking,
like the Michelle Obama
up our people, locking up our people in a lot of cases for nonviolent offenses. So the public is essentially getting humiliated and prison raped on that one. Yeah.
Well, here's what they get. Here's what they get. And this is what's really going on here. It doesn't make sense to most normal people like us, if you want to consider us normal in any way, shape, or form. But here's the deal. This GEO Corporation is dependent on public dollars for all of its profits. All of its money literally comes from our tax dollars. So if you want to get some political favor with state and local officials who are handing out contracts to these prisons and you want to expand and everything else, you just done a great community service, did you not? You just gave all this money to Florida Atlantic to put your name on there so they didn't have to go out and get private money. So they named it after you. You've done them a favor by putting that money there. So we're going to do you a favor by giving you a new fat prison contract. That's exactly all this is. That's
yep.
all this is trading political favor. They take the profits. They're going to get that money tenfold back by new contracts with the prisons. And this is just totally ridiculous to me. But once again, you know, it's incredible because we continue to be struck by idiocy like this. I don't know what the answer is to all of this, but I just thought it was a very fascinating story. And here's another great story that's going to have implications across the world, Ed. Cuba, Raul Castro. He was just recently reelected. Fidel's brother, Raul Castro, was recently reelected. He put a speech out yesterday, and as part of his speech, said that he will step down as Cuba's president in 2018 once his term expires. Now, Raul is 81 years old now, so he'll be 86 when his term expires, if he lasts that long. But this is the first time anybody has ever even considered a post-Castro era in Cuba.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, I know a few Cuban refugees, and, they didn't know what to think when Raul, they definitely didn't like Castro, because in spite of, they all actually know Castro's loaded. They know he's been scamming. They know he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. They know his daughter lives in the United States. I mean, they know this. And so when Raul came in, I know that, the immigrants and the refugees that I know, they were cautiously optimistic. Now, since then, they said, he has instituted a lot of reforms as opposed to his very, idealistic and communist, hardcore communist brother. So, what the hell? Why wouldn't he do it? I guess is the question. He's going to be 86. He's pushing 90. He's loaded.
Well, sure.
Oh, what the hell? Maybe if people can change their minds. Maybe, just maybe, he's traveled around enough, he's seen enough, and he knows that, that this isn't working. And he doesn't want to be, he wants to be remembered properly for something. So, if you're dying and
What's really interesting, too, Ed.
Maybe now's a good time to do the right thing because maybe he's facing his mortality. I can't say 100%, but, it's a good thing.
Well, it's really interesting because, Castro also replaced Machado Ventura, who has been his number two job forever. I replaced him with a younger guy, 52-year-old Miguel Diaz-Canel, as his top lieutenant, and he will be the president if something happens to Raul. So he has already named him to be his successor, if possible. But what's really, really interesting here is that Castro actually went on record with a couple of things I hadn't heard before out of this. He said that he hopes during this term to establish term limits. He wants a two-term limit and age caps for all political offices, including the presidency. Now, you think about this. Fidel and Raul have controlled Cuba since the 1959 revolution. There's only been two people, but he all of a sudden wants a two-term limit, and he wants age caps so that they can keep younger guys into politics. And then he goes on to say, of course, he wasn't trying to restore capitalism to Cuba, that he was elected to defend, maintain, and continue to perfect socialism, which is interesting because when you start getting into two-term limits, age caps, and those kind of things that we refuse to discuss over here, in a dictatorship communist society like Cuba – that's a very telling sign of things to come, is it not?
Yeah, in 10 years they're going to be their political system might be more responsive and less bought, paid for, and institutionalized than our political system. Wouldn't that be a shocker?
It would. That would be phenomenal. And you're talking about 2018, 5 years away. It would be phenomenal if all this happened in the next year or two. you know, and then we've got to start having this discussion on U.S. soil. I will bet you right now, anything you want, I will bet you that this is not a discussion that we're going to have, regardless of what's going on in Cuba. You will see this get whitewashed by mainstream media because, quite frankly, they'd be scared to death of a two-term limit on our Congress. They would be scared to death of it. You know, we can't even get rid of that.
Wouldn't that be the irony of ironies? If Cuba, the communist holdout, the country where the supreme leader walked around in combat fatigues, you know, forever and a day, wouldn't it just be the ultimate delicious irony if in fact they instituted, you know, anti-corruption measures, term mm-hmm. limits, age limits, so you don't end up with, you know, some Strom Thurmond and type guys up there? Wouldn't that just be? I like irony. I just think that would be so much. It'd be so interesting as irony goes, and it's just like, man.
Well,
God,
it would be completely crazy if Cuba actually became the free leader of the world.
It takes Cuba 60 years, 70 years. To catch us, you know, and finally work that whole Castro thing through their system. But then as soon as they do, they blow right past us. I mean, wow, how humiliating.
Well, that's it. Even the left-leaning Huffington Post had to put something out on that today. And, of course, I mean, even the left-leaning Huffington Post pointed out that on the streets of Havana, where people just generally don't have any faith in politics, that there was excitement. They quoted a couple people. Roberto Delgado, said this was the start of a new era. Regla Blanco, 48 years old, said that, you know, I'm mesmerized. You know, we thought with these old men that it would never end. You know, now it looks like it might be. So, you know, we're looking at a lot of different things here. Economic changes, social changes, private things. All these things are starting to come around, regardless of what Raul says about trying to protect and perfect socialism. Clearly, the people are tired of that. And he's basically setting the stage so that when he exits in 5 years, somebody else can be blamed for fixing the problems in Cuba, you know, for going to a capitalistic society. I think that's very clear. I think it's ultimately awesome news. We're gonna really, really set the stage now on a world level. We're going to see how we truly react to Cuba going forward. I will bet you that the sanctions and everything else we've had against Cuba forever will slowly disappear over the next couple of years. They're going to have to, because we have no.
I think if they go that route and somebody named Castro is not leading the country, I think it's not going to be slowly. I think you're going to open that thing right up. I hope so.
Well, we shall see. We shall see, because I think it's a very, very interesting story, and coming from a Castro makes it even more so. On the U.S. front, disturbing news. Disturbing news. It looks as though Detroit is on the verge of bankruptcy. If they go there, this will be the largest municipal bankruptcy in history. This story came out a couple of weeks ago. I've been trying to verify a lot of this information, and I've been able to verify it. But you know, Detroit was once the greatest manufacturing city in the world, Ed, in the world.
Yeah.
Everybody looked at Detroit. They were awed by it. They didn't know what to think about it. But now we've got unemployment rampant in Detroit. Most of the reason is because they've lost every bit of their factory infrastructure, including the automobile market, even though they're trying to bring some of that back now. But 60% of children live in poverty. The city government is on the verge of bankruptcy, going so far as to say that they're weeks or months away from running out of cash. When they do declare bankruptcy, and I think that's a foregone conclusion, it'll be the largest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the U.S. And Detroit is really, truly not alone. We've already had California municipal bankruptcy. We've already had Birmingham, Alabama municipal bankruptcy. We've already had some serious, large, multi-billion-dollar bankruptcies by these cities. Detroit will be the next one in a line, but it will be the largest. What does that really say about the cities and the municipalities in America as a whole?
Well, I think it says the same thing that it does about states like Kentucky. I mean, we get a bunch of people in, they focus on getting reelected, and they don't focus on, I can tell you, like in our business, and, you know, businesses succeed and businesses fail. It happens. Cities succeed, governments succeed, and they fail. And I think the problem is you get people in, and they always take, and politicians are notorious for it because they never look to the next generation. It's just like, we're here, we're now, you know, give it away, whatever. whether it's welfare or benefits or freebies or low taxes, you know, unreasonably low taxes, you name it. These politicians just give crap away, just like they do with the Kentucky retirement system, just like Illinois, you know, there's a website called Illinois is Broke. You know, they've been overly generous with stuff, and it's just short-sighted politicians that didn't bank money and didn't properly invest in infrastructure and education, and I say properly invest in infrastructure and education when the cash was flowing well, and they didn't do it. They just gave it away to garner more votes. And now, you know, it's a flat spin. They can't get out of it. They're dead.
What was fascinating is they gave that money away to the unionized auto industry. And I have to point that out, folks, because the auto industry raped and pillaged Detroit like nothing you'd ever seen before. They were the auto capital of the world. And all of them were unionized and everything else. So all these giveaways were given to keep these great union jobs. And the companies, look what they did. I mean, here's the reality. Detroit was once the fourth largest city in the U.S., it had almost 2 million people. Over the last couple of decades, Detroit has dropped from almost 2 million people to about 713,000 people, most of which live in poverty. Over 60%, remember that. Between December of 2000 and December of 2010, according to Census Bureau information, folks, 48% of the manufacturing jobs in Michigan were lost. Almost half of the manufacturing jobs in Michigan were lost. When you lose that many jobs in a short amount of time, like a decade, you're going to have problems. There's no way around this. So what do we do here?
And I think one of the things is again the short-sightedness. You know, they went in, they gave everybody what they wanted, whether it was union or whatnot, and then at some point along the way, they found out that, you know what, Spartanburg, South Carolina, and Alabama, and cities that, you know, whether they went right to work or whether they were just more cost efficient and more industry friendly, they began to strip the big stinky ass old wore out inefficient factories. They began to strip them. They began to compete with them.
Well, here's some more disturbing facts.
Look at Kentucky. Look what happens here. You know, we're building Toyotas. Detroit didn't get it because, you know, not that we're, you know, we don't have right to work, but, you know, Toyota was able to come in and set up a nice big plant in Indiana and in Kentucky. And it's short-sighted. They didn't invest in their infrastructure. They didn't invest in their, you know, and they just got unreasonable. And it was just year over year over year rather than planning for decade over decade. And now they're toast.
Well, you guys go to economiccollapseblog.com. That's where a lot of this information is coming from. I just posted a link in the chat room as well. But, you know, you have to really look at this. They went from the fourth largest city in America to the 18th. You know, they're smaller than Austin, Texas, and Charlotte, North Carolina now. Back in 1960, Detroit had the highest per capita income in the U.S. Now it's the lowest. The unemployment rate that they actually claim is about 18%, but we know that number is doubled. So like I said, 60% of children in Detroit live in poverty. One-third of Detroit's, you know, property, you know, their mileage of property and everything else is either vacant or derelict. You know, this is really interesting, too, because a lot of people think you can't buy cheap homes anymore. You can buy them. You just don't want to live there. In Detroit, the median price of a home in Detroit, Ed, is just $9,000. There are still some areas in Detroit where you can buy a house now for $100. Just because they're so run down, they want to get rid of them. Tell you how bad the problem is. Currently, there's 85,000 streets.
At that point, they're not even worth stripping the copper out because somebody beats you to it. So,
well, that's where I was going next, because there's 85,000 streetlights in Detroit, but these have stripped so much copper wiring out of the lights that more than half of them aren't working. And because of that, the mayor of Detroit, Mayor Bing, has decided he's going to announce a plan to reduce the number of streetlights in Detroit to about half of that, to 46,000. So, you know, 47% of all people in Detroit are functionally illiterate. Think about that. The murder rate in Detroit, 11 times higher than New York City. You know, this is disturbing. This is disturbing. And Detroit is just the latest example of what is going on with America's cities. You know, the mayor has closed schools. He's cut off spending in poverty-driven areas. He's done everything he can do. You know, and still no changes. So we've got a really alarming situation here. You know, when Detroit goes bankrupt, that's going to tell the whole world, yeah, we're serious. Most people didn't want to pay much attention to Birmingham, Alabama. they take California with a grain of salt because California has always been a money pit, and we know it. Now we've got Detroit. You know, what's happened to them in a decade is alarming. And quite frankly, Ed, that's what's happening to cities all across the country, including right here at home.
When you look at, if you're going to put it in a long-term perspective, you've got to look at the mess that our state is in. We're one of the worst, if not the worst, depending on what category you're looking at, we're one of the worst states in the union. And what's going to happen? I mean, what's going to happen with our infrastructure? What's going to happen with our education? What's going to happen with our health care when the lawmakers in Frankfurt who are in session right now don't get, you know, the $32 billion question answered, you know, in a state with just a couple million people working? I mean,
well, we've got the worst pension system.
How do you stop it? How do you maintain infrastructure? How do you pay your teachers? How do you pay your law enforcement and your protection? Yeah, like fire protection. It's just, you know, people. That's probably my biggest pet peeve when it comes to government. It's they just take a year to year, quarter to quarter. You know, if you're lucky, they'll reach out and do like a 2-year window. But they don't look out 10, 15 years, and usually a bunch of the old farts that are in there that essentially set a path for the rocks, and they're long gone. But, mind you, they will protect their pensions.
Well, that's exactly it. That's why we have a pension crisis in Kentucky right now. We're one of the worst states in the country for pension, for funding of pensions, and it's because these politicians gave themselves these golden parachute pensions. We've got so many people that are double and triple dipping. It's unbelievable. You've got all these government employees who are on a golden parachute retirement plan. You know, they're not on the same retirement plan as mainstream America. So the pensions are bankrupt in Kentucky as we speak. Then you get into other news. Louisville, just last week I announced that Louisville was ranked as the third worst city in America. You heard me right, folks. The third worst city in America to find a job in by Forbes.com. You know, you throw that on top of that, the heroin problem that we've got, the pill problem we've got, Suboxone is incredibly popular here in Louisville. You know, you've got all of these different things. You're looking at the destruction of Louisville when you look at the history of Detroit. We are there. If we don't have jobs. We don't have money. Folks, we are there right here in Louisville, Kentucky. You know, and this at one time was considered a nice, safe city, a good city to live in and raise your kids, a city that was happening, blah, 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 you know, insert name here. And we're on the same path of destruction. And, you know, the one thing that all these things have in common, you're going to love it, Ed, liberal leaders, the Democrats.
Yep, Democrats. Yep.
When you look at all the freebies that everybody wants to continue talking about with these liberals out there giving all these freebies away, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you that, you don't have to do anything. You know, this is what you get in return. Now, we have an 18% on-the-record unemployment rate, and we're not far from that now, believe it or not, regardless of what they're reporting. You know, when you have an unemployment rate that's that high, when you have jobs that you can't get, you know, and everything else, there's no opportunity. You know, our housing prices are falling, but our PVA, our Property Valuation Administrator, Tony Lindauer, will never adjust downward because of the tax base. And then you've got all this idiocy going on by the mega lawsuits. I mean, there are at least 7 lawsuits against Louisville right now, including the LMPD. I will be the next one after the end of this month or at the end of March, you know, because what they're doing. What are they doing? They're out there harassing the average private citizens who are trying to do the job every day and paying the taxes. These are the ones that they're now harassing, you know, so they can get more money for the court system and all the other crap. I mean, it's a circle jerk is all it is because nobody wants to do the job the way they're supposed to do it. So I find it very fascinating, and I think we're in a world of hurt in the very near future. And when I look at Birmingham, Alabama, when I look at Simi Valley, California, when I look at Detroit, Michigan, you know, Chicago, the list goes on and on and on. We are going to have some serious problems in Louisville, but these are just symptoms of the larger problem in suburbia America. Is it right?
Yeah, and I think where we're, you know, I don't know how fast we're going to hit, but I think just sometimes as a matter of mathematics, you just look at it and you just realize that the numbers in some cases are so big that you just can't, you know, you just can't work your way out of it. If you don't start way back, like with Detroit, whatever's ailing Detroit started 30 years ago. Whatever's ailing Kentucky started, you know, 20 years ago. Maybe we'll see it then. But just a complete lack of vision and the lack of imagination and lack of discipline. You know, I'll be honest, as anybody listening knows, it takes discipline to plan, you know, 30 years out financially, whether you're in a house, you know, or you decide to buy a house and make your payments, whatever. If you want to be successful, you've got to set things up on at least a 10-year plan, if not a 20 or 30-year plan, because, you know, there's always tell my kids, hey, unless you plan on dying young, you're going to make it there, so you might as well start doing things now to set yourself up appropriately. So, you know, unless these politicians think that the world's going to come to an end or something, then, you know, you need to plan for 30 years out. But they don't. It's too much to ask of them.
Well, I totally agree with that. You know, and that's the thing. They don't want to plan for the future. These guys only plan for themselves. When they plan for the future, I mean, that's exactly what they do. They plan for themselves for the future. That's why we had the runaway pension costs. You know, it's like everybody wants to talk about education, Ed. We're screaming and hollering. We need more money in education. We need more money in education. Well, the reality is 60% of the budget goes to education, and that budget goes up every year. Don't let them lie to you and tell you how much they're cutting. That's a lie. That budget goes up every year, Ed, so I don't get this. You know, we want to talk about this. Look what's happened in Detroit. They had all kinds of money they were throwing in education, and now they had to shut half of their schools because they couldn't afford to keep them open. It's scary, Ed. It really is. We're running out of time fast, my friend. I tell you what, let's get into final thoughts. What do you got?
Well, you know, final thoughts. I've been on a little bit of a tear recently since I got back in town, mostly, you know, and I have my predictions for the Kentucky State Legislature. They're not going to do anything meaningful. I don't know if you saw that or not. In spite of Cromer, they're not going to do hemp because, you know, they need to keep that one. They need to keep all these things on the burner so we're convinced we need them. They're not going to fix the pension. They're not going to reform taxes in spite of your pal Jerry running all over the state with his blue ribbon tax commission. They're not going to fix that. They're not going to do infrastructure, education, or the drug problem in any meaningful way. It's just the only thing they're going to do is have a special session to address one of those things, and then they'll fail at that, you know. And it's just they just don't have a plan. And as much as I tell people, oh, I'm a private sector guy, sometimes when I just take the big picture in, I look at it and think, God, I really don't want to get back into politics, you know, first person. But I look at it and think, God, somebody's got to do it, you know. And I can say, you know, hey, does anybody out there see what we see? Does anybody, if you do, by all means, you know, what are we going to do about it? I know your son gets really fired up about it. And, it's just like, you know, guys, the thing is, and one of the things that puts pressure on me and maybe you and some other people, is I find myself wondering, you know, speaking in terms of that 30-year window or that 20-year window, if we don't start now, if we don't start soon, it's going to be too late, because these are things that will sneak up and you know, the poison gets into the bloodstream of the system many years before, you know, the actual death takes place, just like Detroit. So, you know, if we don't stop, we don't find a way to turn it soon, even in states where things feel halfway okay, if there's going to be problems. And states and federal, it's just, I look at it and I think, oh, Lord, you know, how do you plan? How do you look at the next generation? How do you set the next generation up, you know, when you realize this kind of dysfunction is coming down the pike, and aside from defaulting, you're going to have to deal with it. So I don't know. It gets me confused sometimes. It gets me aggravated. And you look at it, and the problems are so big, it's like trying to climb Mount Everest without oxygen. I don't know if it can be done or not.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, for me, it's just a fascinating that we see all of this. We report on it every day. You know, Well, it's not necessarily being nerds. I mean, this is what I do for a living, you know, so it's not necessarily that I'm a nerd. My job, as far as I see it, is to find the truth, tell people the truth, and let them be judges for themselves. It's the one thing that mainstream media should be doing, but don't. When we look at the examples of Detroit, when we look at the examples of Birmingham, Alabama, Simi Valley, California, Chicago, Illinois, Indianapolis, Indiana, New York City, insert city here, we see the same exact problems. And that's what has me more alarmed than anything. This isn't like one city made a mistake, you know, and everybody copied it. This is institutional. This is institutional from the top down. You know, when you want everything given to you and you expect everything given to you, you just become a servant. You become a servant. You become that drug-addicted person. You are now an opium addict, as you like to call it, other people's money. And that systematically is what's been going on over the last 30 and 40 years. And that problem in some cities has been greater, which has led to destruction quicker. And that same problem has been just a little bit slower in other places. But it's still the same problem. We, the people, have forgotten that our government is about us. What our government does is what we hold them accountable to. I'm going to let you guys on a little secret. It's a saying I use in every day in every part of my life. And it's one that I live by. And yeah, I know people have their own sayings, but this is one I hope you pay attention to. People will only give you what you're willing to accept. If you're being abused in a relationship and you don't leave that relationship and cut that cord, you've just told that abuser that you're accepting that as behavior. You've just told that abuser that you're willing to accept the fact that they beat you every day. I think the American people are in an abusive relationship with our American government. I think that our government abuses us each and every day. And we, the people as a whole, not all of us, but as a whole, are telling that abuser that that's acceptable behavior. Myself, I find that unacceptable behavior. Myself, I try to make sure that you people are informed of the truth each and every day, and hopefully you will realize that you are a victim of abuse by your own government. Myself, if all of us can stand together and turn a few people to understand that, maybe one day we can stop the abuse by holding the Constitution up and saying, look, here's the law of the land. Let's get back to it. This worked in America. It worked in America for many, many years. But unfortunately, man, those opium addicts, it's hard to break that habit, right? Ask anybody who's ever been in an abused relationship how hard it is to get out of that. We, the people, have got to come to that realization that we are being abused, we are being victimized, and we are the ones who have the control to stop it, but we refuse to stop it. And that's the biggest concern I've got in America today. Mr. Martin, tomorrow night, my friend, you will be here. All right, sir. We'll see you then. Thank you so much. For the rest of you guys, you can catch a replay of this at Stitcher.com. You can catch us at LouisvillePolitics.com. This will be up later. Go to Blog Talk, of course, anywhere you want. Don't forget to check out LouisvillePolitics.com for this story and many, many others going forward. Thanks for joining us tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, same channel. We'll see you then. Take care. Have a great night.
I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can. Constitution.